Afternoon, everyone. Welcome. The Tour de France is on. It's happening. Well, it's not on today because it's the rest day, but it's happening. The best 3 weeks of the sporting year. And you never know. Football's not coming home, but the Maillot Jaune could still come home. And it could still come home, not necessarily for Chris Froome, for an actual proper British person who's Welsh born and bred. So far, we've only had British Tour de France winners that were born in Kenya or Ghent. Not that I'm bitter, of course. Congratulations to England on getting as far as they did in the World Cup. That was certainly quite exciting from a personal perspective. Being a Weymouth fan, we don't tend to get that many big wins. So, it's been exciting. But now it's all about the Tour. The first week of the Tour de France has been... it's been the same but different, if that makes any sort of sense. It's been the sprint stages, the breakaways not getting there to the finish, but aside from Yana Fredo, who seems to be in every breakaway in the Tour de France, we are in a position where we've had different riders at the front, different riders in the breakaways, and different sprinters contesting the finish. But as a result still of all of that, the actual sort of profile of the stages hasn't changed much. We've had sort of hilly first week finishes, the kind of stuff that we've seen work really well in the La Vuelta. So we've had a couple of uphill sprints plus the Muir de Bretagne. So where to start? We'll go back to the start of the Tour. And Fernando Gaviria winning stages, getting the jersey, looking fairly solid. Peter Sagan, of course, multiple stage winner. He looked as though he was in for the duration. Having said that, he floundered pretty badly in the team time trial, putting in a pretty disappointing ride, really. The only massive obstacle on the course he managed to get dropped on. And from that, he lost enough time to kiss goodbye to the yellow jersey. Now, there will be some people that would argue that you know, from his perspective, that's not a bad place to be, because there will be transitional stages between the Alps and the Pyrenees coming up, and they're the sort of stages where he can romp through and get points that will secure him the green jersey. And I think with Michael Matthews having gone home sick, and Gaviria having a disqualification after his... headbutt with Andre Greipel, I think we're seeing the situation where Sagan's going to pretty much win the green jersey unopposed, because Kittel and Cavendish and Greipel you know, are nowhere near good enough. In terms of the sprint finishes, they've kind of come in bunches. Gaviria looked great to start, then Sagan looked unbeatable, Groenewegen looked unbeatable. Of course, now we're going into that mountain phase of the Tour. Groenewegen as well has had a crash, as has Greipel. So it'll be interesting to see what sprinters, or which sprinters, should I say, make it through the transitionals and the Alps and the Pyrenees to contest it on the Champs-Élysées. And also the mysterious complete lack of form from Mark Cavendish. Where will that lead us to? He's kind of contesting around that 8th, 9th, 10th position, and you wonder whether that is now his level. There are already people saying this is Mark's level, Cavendish's level now. I've also heard some, you know, spurious rumours that he's unhappy with his bike or his gears or whatever. I mean, I think it's clear that he's not on it. He's had too many crashes really at the start of the calendar year, or the racing year as well, to actually be able to go ahead and properly contest, you know, the level. He needs to have had more racing than he's had to be at the level that he needs to be, and that's where he's at, really. And that's not going to change in the next sort of couple of weeks. He will be you know, where he will be. It might be that a tough run through the mountains and a couple of days escaping the you know, the time cut might actually put him in good stead, and it could well be that almost by default he gets another run at the Champs-Élysées, because a lot of the other sprinters will be at home. It could also be, of course, that he's running himself through this Tour de France almost as preparation, and there seems to be a few stages in the first week of La Vuelta that could well be taken out by a sprinter. So, you know, he might be trying to ride himself into some level of form, and unfortunately for him, he's having to use the Tour de France as a catch-up to get miles in his legs. Not many people would use the Tour as that tune-up, but he has lost that much time this season to injury that he needs to come up with a way of catching some of the others up in terms of form. In terms of the GC, it kind of started out dramatic and it stayed pretty dramatic since. Long gone by the looks of things are the days where the GC riders could hide out, you know, in the peloton for, you know, the first 8-9 stages maybe even, and not have to engage. The GC riders were kind of falling off first day. You saw Froome down, Port down. So, you know, the actual race itself now is the full 3 weeks. If you want to win it, you have to be attentive for the full 3 weeks. It's not just about being ready at the key moments, about being ready for the mountains, limiting your losses in the time trials, and just, you know, being getting through the flat stages. And we've seen that with Froome. And, you know, as the week progressed, it seemed that every GC rider wanted their own little piece of that misfortune pie. We saw Bardet and Dumoulin hit each other, not physically, in a crash, and take each other down. We saw Quintana lose time. Adam Yates has been on his backside a couple of times. So, you know, all of them have been in a position where they have lost time. And we kind of had that bizarre situation where after the team time trial, everyone seemed to be back on some level of parity, because, you know, the riders who lost time early on in the first stage, they were getting it back, you know, at the end of that time trial. And we came towards the end of this week with a pretty decent status quo, to be honest, in terms of how the race was shaping up. And you looked and you felt that actually this was planning to, or shaping up to, be a pretty decent wide open Tour de France. Apart from Geraint Thomas and Rigoberto Urán, most of the favourites were bunched together, and there were some that were, you know, you could have thrown a sort of 8-9 second blanket over three or four of them. It was fantastic. Even with the hilly finishes, even with the team time trial, the Tour de France had done its best, but it could not separate the pack out to a greater extent. And you would have looked if you know, yesterday's stage before the rest day had been a normal Tour de France stage, you would have looked and said, wow, this is balanced and poised going into the Alps. As it happened, yesterday's stage was enough to cause absolute pandemonium, and we now see the GC riders probably spread out to the sort of level that we might have expected going into the Tour de France, to say, right, as we approach the Alps, who's going to be where. There's a few dangerous riders, a few sleepers. You know, you've got Fuglsang and Rafa Majka, who are all reasonably well placed and riding relatively well. And you've got the riders that little bit further down who will probably need to be attacking and aggressive to do something in the race. And I would include kind of Quintana and Bardet, if he's physically fit after his crash, Dan Martin. So there are riders who can form pretty decent alliances if need be, and can get themselves into the position where they can go on the attack and try and get some time back. I mean, Quintana's probably the most interesting one, because you'd look at Landa and Valverde. There's no real necessary situation where they're going to have to try and animate the race too early or too soon, so they could almost throw Quintana out the front as a sleeper and see what Froome's got. I mean, it's clear that I think Froome is struggling, and now they can say what they want, Sky, as to whether or not they're bringing him to form like for the last week, whether he's doing this weight loss thing that he did in the Giro. But, you know, he was in the wrong place in the wrong time day one, fell off. Okay, fine in the team time trial. Lost wheels, lost time on the Muir de Britannia. And was clearly struggling even, you know, before he fell off. He had one or two moments on the cobbles yesterday. So, Froome, and I know we said this in the Giro and we were proved wrong, but he doesn't look right bang on top of his game. He might, you know, he might well be bluffing. You know, he could have more than enough, even if he isn't on top of his game. It could be a case of where the race is won from the front and the other riders fall away. That's not beyond the realms of possibility. And of course, despite all of the upcoming mountain challenges, there's still that pretty significant time trial just before the final weekend. So he has still got opportunities in the bag, so to speak. So looking at some of the big favourites, you would look at, is Geraint Thomas still a big favourite? I don't know. There's all of this talk about him being on an equal footing with Froome and their co-leaders of Team Sky. I feel like they've just done that to be trendy because Movistar have got three leaders, so Sky have decided to have two. I think if the chips were down, I think G knows this, that Sky are always going to back Froome over him. And I think even 80% Chris Froome would probably get more Sky support than 100%, you know, fit and on form Geraint Thomas. And that's kind of like the reality. Behind those, you would look at Dumoulin probably, even though he's lost a bit of time, you would look at him potentially as a good outside bet still for at least the podium. You do look and wonder if that 20 seconds that he lost, you know, is going to be a problem from the time penalty. Maybe so. We'll have to wait and see. In addition, there is Romain Bardet. He's a little bit too far back, I think, now maybe to win the Tour. But, you know, he could get into a break. Wouldn't it be nice to see a Frenchman going for the win, not just of the stage, but of the whole Tour on Alpe d'Huez? There's a possibility, of course, that could still happen. And again, then, you're looking at Rigoberto Urán. He's quite a long way back after his trouble on the cobbles. Don't know how fit or otherwise he is. And then you're into kind of like Valverde. I don't think he's got a Tour de France win in him. Lando, we need to see how he bounces back, literally, after falling over on the cobblestones. And Quintana, who's again, I think, the kingmaker still, and still the man most likely to challenge Froome for the Tour. I don't see Micah and Fuglsang as potential winners of the Tour, but, you know, they're clearly a factor because, you know, they've got a bit of time in hand. Of course, of the GC contenders, there is one name now glaringly missing, and that's Richie Port, who's managed to fall and end up out of a big bike race again. And you do wonder, you wonder what he's done to deserve that kind of luck, for sure. But you also think, you know, it's not worked for him, has it, being a Grand Tour rider? You look at that first Tour for Sky, you know, taking aside that Giro he was really strong in for Saxo Bank, you look at his first Tour Giro for Sky where he was leader, you know, it all went wrong, he borrowed a wheel from a rival team, lost loads of time, got sick and went home. It seems that sort of thing seems to set the precedent for Port, and he's never really assuredly convinced me that he is a proper Grand Tour contender. You saw the start a couple of years ago where he managed to fall over early on and lose time, and his team didn't wait for him, they waited for Van Garderen instead, TJ Van Garderen. And then yesterday, something seemingly innocuous right in the middle of the bunch, 20-30 k's maybe from where the first set of cobbles were, and he's down and his shoulders, his collarbone's, you know, fractured, and he's out of the Tour. And you looked him sat on, when they moved him out of the road and sat him on that pavement, all of the emotion coming out, and you think he's probably looking at it and thinking, I don't think I've got many more, if any more, shots left to win the Tour de France. And you feel sorry for the guy because, you know, everyone knows what it's like when you're achieving whatever level of sport that you're looking to achieve in, and you've got a goal and it's, you know, it's robbed from you or taken from you or you don't achieve it. And or that emotion coming out, just because he's paid, you know, millions of euro a year to do it, doesn't mean that he doesn't feel the same things that you know, a club rider does, or, you know, he doesn't feel the anguish you feel when you don't achieve your goal in a sportif or your club 10, you're 5 seconds off what you want it to be. I genuinely don't know. And from BMC's perspective, if the team is to be saved, it's pretty much Greg Van Avermaet doing it on his own now, isn't it, with his attack in the yellow jersey into Roubaix. You look and think, right, okay, their backup plan in the GC, Van Garderen, he fell over on his backside not that long after Port was out of the race, and it's unravelling for them as a team, and it's very sad to see what has been one of the better teams, and of course has won the Tour de France, one of the better teams. Well, actually they didn't, did they? Cadel Evans was still on Lotto when he won it. You know, where do they go? Where do they go from here? And it's yeah, I don't know is the short answer, but it's very sad, and the race goes on and has to go on. And now we can kind of look forward to the Alps that are coming this week. We have the Grand Bernon and Alpe d'Huez coming up fairly soon before the weekend. And of course, Alpe d'Huez will be the one that people will look at, that people will talk about. The 21 Bends, the famous 21 Bends. I can't see anything other than a Romain Bardet win, if I'm being honest. Maybe Warren Barguil, if he's, you know, given enough rope to go off the front. If not, you wonder whether the GC contenders will mark each other out to such an extent that, you know, like someone from even further back, like a Lilian Calmejean, can go in a breakaway. You wonder whether, if Calmejean's in a breakaway on the Alpe d'Huez day, you'd be fairly confident that Thomas de Gendt will be in there with him. And they're the sort of riders that are strong enough. You know, de Gendt's won on Mont Ventoux and the Stelvio. There's no reason, no earthly reason why, you know, in the right breakaway circumstances, de Gendt couldn't win on Alpe d'Huez. And Lotto needs something, with Greipel injured, Benoot already home after his injuries. You know, Lotto need a little bit of something. In terms of other sort of outliers, sleepers maybe for stage wins, and a good run at the GC, you'd have to still say Primoz Roglic is in a reasonable position for Lotto Jumbo. Could have probably done with a slightly better team time trial from them, but he will, I'm sure, you know, take the position he's in. I don't think he'll get the leeway that he got to get in a breakaway last year. I think that you know, Froome and Sky will be wise to that one. But, you know, why not? Why can't he be top 10, top 5? It's shaping up really, really nicely. It's looking like being, you know, we've had one of the best football World Cups in living memory. This could still be one of the better Tours de France in living memory. You know, there is still the risk that in 2 days' time, Froome will have, you know, put minutes into all of his GC rivals, and the Tour will be pretty much over, barring an accident. Excuse me. But I don't see that this year. I genuinely don't see that. I don't see Sky necessarily wanting to control it yet. I don't see, with eight-man teams, no one's going to want to do it for the best part of 2 weeks. So we are in that exciting, you know, new phase for the Tour, where, you know, anything can happen. And I hope it does, because the Tour deserves, you know, needs a bit of exciting, different sort of racing rather than the formulaic, you know, Froome or whomever sort of romping home to win. So let's see. It'd be nice to see the Tour go down, you know, at least to that short 60-kilometer stage, if not the final time trial, and see the jersey maybe swapping hands a few times. Yeah, so there you have it. That's it for our week one Tour de France review. I hope you've enjoyed it. This was the 104th Fendrian cast, a podcast without production, without any expense, because we haven't got any money. But please do follow us at fendrien.eu. That's fendrien.eu, where we have a blog, links to the podcast, some photos, that sort of stuff. Just because we're here to kind of celebrate the sort of flattish terrain of the east-ish now, because I've moved, of England, its similarity to Flanders primarily, and the fact that we like the rough old farm tracks and, you know, those kind of short, steep climbs. But also, we like, you know, we like cycling in its entirety, and that's why the podcast had been weekly, a 10-minute weekly slot for many a moon, 2 or 3 years. We're now kind of just trying to add a bit more depth to the podcast, so maybe not go as short, but maybe not go as often. And you know, if there's nothing to say, we won't say it. If there's something to say, we'll pod it and put it out. So again, the plan remains for the tour to just go weekly. So hopefully, you know, Monday next week we'll be able to put something out, and hopefully you'll enjoy it and keep listening and tell your friends about the show, because you know, we of course we want people to listen and share, and to enjoy our output. So you know, please do get in touch on social media and all the various other channels if you would like to say hi. Other than that, it only remains for me to say goodbye, enjoy the week of the tour, and we'll speak to you again this time next week.